Hey, everybody. Welcome. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I want to welcome you to today's webinar on the most common questions asked by consumers and how to answer them. While every collection operation works a little bit different and may answer questions differently, many of the questions that they receive from consumers are the same. Consumers tend to ask the same questions over and over again, and developing answers that are helpful, empathetic, and try to share the benefits of making a payment are not always easy to come by. So today in this webinar, which is being sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning, we've got a panel of experts here to share to talk about the most common questions they hear that are asked by consumers and how to answer them. As I mentioned, this webinar is being sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning. Peak Revenue Learning's knowledge source will help you take advantage of the spacing and testing effects. These concepts are proven to be among the most effective methods of learning improvement and knowledge retention. The focused iteration training capabilities of Knowledge Source will have a major impact on employee understanding and application of the skills required to collect more money and the laws and related policies and procedures staff members must be compliant with. You can learn more about them by visiting them online at peakrevenuelearning.com. I'm going to drop a link right there in the chat that you can use to visit their website. I encourage everybody to do so. And we're going to hear from Chris Rickman from Peak Revenue Learning a little later in our program. Let me introduce you now to our panelists. Larry Baker is the Vice President of Operations for RGS Financial, a premier BPO and accounts receivable management firm who started his career in the collections industry in 2005. Larry rapidly accelerated his career leveraging his emotional intelligence and growing collections acumen and has since worked across the collections spectrum, developing a reputation for consistently delivering best-in-class results. Prior to his current role overseeing all of RGS Financial's client collection portfolios, Larry served as RGS Financial's leader supporting the Department of Education. He has a bachelor's degree in finance and is a rabid Saints and Dodgers fan who enjoys playing competitive softball and snowboarding in his spare time. With more than 15 years of dedicated service at American Profit Recovery, Bruce Beagle's established a reputation for excellence in the field of debt recovery. He began his career as a collector and was subsequently promoted to collections manager. Now, as compliance officer, he holds a CCCO certification, ensuring adherence to industry regulations and ethical standards. His extensive experience and commitment to compliance have been instrumental in maintaining the company's integrity and success. Jose Giron is the Director of Operations and Third Party and Bad Debt for State Collection Service, where he's been for the last 4 years. He has more than 20 years of experience in the collections industry, where he has managed just about every type of debt you can think of. Jose is passionate about developing strong leaders and delivering and driving strong results for his customers and clients. Rick Rainow has more than 30 years in the industry, starting out as a collector in 1991 with Transworld Systems in Massachusetts. 2 years later, he was relocated to Indianapolis as a regional manager where he now currently resides. In 2004, he worked his way up to vice president, and in 2008 was delegated to run the entire commercial operations for Transworld. After being downsized in 2012, he decided to own an agency, and Kinnam was born, where he now holds the position of Chief Operating Officer. Rick has also served 3 years as president of the Indiana Collectors Association and currently sits on its board. Everyone who's watching us live today is absolutely invited to ask questions and submit comments during the course of our webinar. You can use the chat or the Q&A to submit your questions and comments. Excuse me, I lost my script for a second. If you wish to participate anonymously, click on the anonymous button in the Q&A, and anything we receive from you is sent anonymously. All right, let's jump into our conversation. So the first thing I want to throw out there is I'm curious, do you actually maintain a list somewhere, or do you teach collectors? Is there a list of common questions that you have, say, in your office? And if so, maybe you can talk a little bit about how it's put together, what some of the questions are on it, how many questions are on it, things like that. Who am I going to pick on to go first? Jose, I'm going to pick on you to go first.
Sure. I don't necessarily keep a list of responses, but I think similar to that, we do have like rebuttal when we do in training is list of common rebuttals. So I guess it's very much tied together. You don't want to overwhelm the newer employee with too many of those. So you're kind of going, I kind of use it in a training environment more of like a family feud. We asked 100 debtors, the top five answers are on the board, and kind of take that kind of approach to it because making it fun kind of helps it for them to use those actual rebuttals. So Just one thing there. And for the tenured folks, I mean, I think that's where you really try to get them to not overthink it sometimes. And I know we're going to get into the weeds on that. But short answer, we do keep rebuttal lists with, I'd say, up to a dozen of the common rebuttals. Now, there are client-specific items to that. So depending on the client, that rebuttal list could be shorter or longer. It also depends on if we have any required verbiage that we have to provide or responses that we have to provide. For example, a good one would be if a patient says the price was too high, or I didn't, you know, why was that so much money? There's an actual pricing rebuttal that the client wants us to provide based on how they price their product. So things like that you have to incorporate into the mix. But short answer, yeah, we certainly keep some form of list for training and for development.
Yeah, one thing I want to add to that, we do the same thing. You want to be careful in your scripting. I can remember at a previous position, we actually had tapes and, you know, rebuttals and all that. And if you find if there's something wrong in that that you've trained everybody in, now you're looking at a class action. So you want to be very careful to make sure that those have been approved by attorneys. I'm not an attorney, play one on TV, so anything I say, don't use that against me later. But yeah, we typically don't have, you know, we do a lot of role playing because you run into the same thing. You know, I'm busy now. Can you call back? Some of these questions I think we're going to be going over. You know, my spouse pays this, you know, I'm driving. You know, typically we want to try to get, you know, the beginning of it, you know, how to avoid the early termination. And then really let them think on their own. You know, they got to, you know, collections is you got to think on your feet. So
I'll jump off of that. I agree. Excuse me.
You do. I think that's a great.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Bruce.
Okay, I apologize. I didn't know if I was on. Just to piggyback off what Rick and Jose are saying, we do the same thing. We have our rebuttals listed. Of course, you can't account for every single scenario, but generally you're going to see a lot of the same topics. We use Balto, which really helps organize all of our scripts, all of our rebuttals, and not only specific questions, but general industries. I think maybe what Jose touched on as well is that we also do for specific clients as well. So we're giving the same answer each time, right? And it's an approved answer that we allow our collectors to give out. There is some time where are you going to be a little off script? Sure. Every call is not going to go exactly the same, but we want to give our collectors as much structure, as much information as they can use to be able to answer answer the rebuttals or give the rebuttals as accurately as possible and give correct information, not misleading information.
Yeah. I completely agree with everybody's statement, especially Rick, you know, that you want to avoid that class action lawsuit if it's scripted and everything's written. But we use what it's called. It's called words to work or words that work. So we have a little just key phrases that have been approved by compliance and legal. And it's just real common phrases that you hear in rebuttals. And so our agents seem to really like that. And it really comes into play in certain circumstances.
Okay. Bruce, circling back to what you were saying, so depending on the client and the type of debt, you may have different rebuttals or different answers to the same question?
Not necessarily to the same question. Some might be very industry specific. We have an account where it's breathalyzers that a company uses, right? We have a very specific talk off of that client and how they manage their accounts. Right, we're not going to use the same talk offs we have with that client for just maybe a run of the mill lawn care or veterinary service. Right, we have industry specific rebuttals that we'll have. You know, a lot of times that comes up with insurance. I'm sure we'll be getting to that at some point. Insurance rebuttals. Well, maybe not going to use the same ones for certain clients with more specific rebuttals to use for them, which would be specific to that client themselves. So we try to give the collector something broad to start out with. And as it goes down, kind of funnel that down and be more specific if they continue to kind of ask the same questions as you move along.
If I could expand on that, I would say, you're considering debt types as well, clients and debt types, because I'll use municipal debt as a good example. You know, nowadays, as we navigate through regulations and whatnot, you know, the question of, you know, what are the consequences of me not, you know, doing anything today or whatever that is, you know, that could vary depending on your debt type. If it's municipal, there might be some real consequence there that you can say, well, this could result in a driver's license suspension or something of that nature. Maybe a business license getting suspended. In medical debt, you really don't have any of that where you can, that's not a rebuttal you could use. So I think just things to consider, different clients, but also different debt types, I think is going to also dictate what types of responses you can actually have scripted and what rebuttals you can provide.
Yeah, that's a great point, Jose, because I started my career on the Department of Education side, and you know, that type of paper, you could discuss and educate about a garnishment process. So, and you can't do that on, you know, in typical, on typical third-party collections. So, great point.
Okay. Looking at some typical questions, I jotted some down, but I've made no secret of the fact that I've never tried to collect a debt. I have never stepped foot in a collection agency, so I'm just sort of spitballing here. So if there are other questions that you would like to throw, if you're in the audience, are there other questions you want to see the how the panel would recommend answering those, or panelists, if there are other questions you want to add to this list, by all means. But you know, I think we've heard this already, and we're you're probably hearing more of it these days. What happens if I don't pay this? You know, what would be a common answer to that, Rick?
Well, first of all, that's a classic setup question, right? John Bedard would say, you know, if the bait is shown, get off the phone. You got to be careful on that one, right? You can't say anything that's not going to happen. You got to be accurate at all times. I always like to ask questions, ask an answer. So they ask you a question, if you're answering questions all the time, they're in control of the conversation, right? So what happens if I don't pay this? I first of all want to know, is this a person, like, why are they asking that question? Are they trying to set me up? I would go in there and ask questions such as, let me give an example. It's kind of like when I'm on the phone with a debtor, and I'm going to use debtor as opposed to consumer. I know some people get all upset with that, but I do, old school. When you're on the phone with these people, it's kind of like they're there to give you, their job is to give you everything, reason why they can't pay, and you have to cut through it, the reason why. It's kind of like that Bugs Bunny, cartoon where he opens up and the frog's sitting there and goes, hello, my baby, hello, my hat. And then he shuts it, and then he opens it back up with this ribbit. That's what the debtors are giving you, all sorts of information. And your job is to go ahead and find out, is it a reason that they can't pay it? Is it a cash flow problem? Are they disputing it? So asking questions is going to be key. And if you don't know answers, this is important. You want to make sure you don't make up stuff. If they're asking you like, hey, if I don't pay this, are you going to sue me? Even if it's a possibility, you want to be very careful. You got to look at what your own company policy is. But you don't want to say, well, yeah, that could be an option. If it's a $500 debt, you don't sue accounts under $500. You don't want to be saying that. So to me, typically, when someone asks a question, what happens if I don't pay this? I'll usually, turn around and say, wow, you told me that on a recorded line that you have no intentions on paying your bill? But no, I didn't say that. I'm just asking. Well, typically, people who ask me what's going to happen when I don't pay are people who don't have any intention of resolving it. If you want to resolve it, then let's go. That my job, they hired me to get this resolved. You do want to resolve your bill, correct, Mr. Consumer? Yes, I do. Okay, well, how did you want to resolve that? It really comes down to phrasing. I'm a big proponent of phrasing. Don't ask, like, can you pay your bill, or do you want to pay your bill? How do you want to pay your bill? You want to answer, the questions that you should know, the answers should be okay to come back. If you ask a question, like, can you pay your bill, you're going to get no, right? So I'll just start off with that. I'm sure there's other good ideas from Jose, Bruce, and Larry.
Yeah, no, good point. I mean, I think it's very important not to get baited, and that's certainly definitely a red flag. I mean, we train people. If someone asks you that, be aware and be cognizant. I think also, especially for tenured reps that have been doing it a while and they need, constant refreshers, it's always important that they're not overthinking it when they get a question like that. I think sometimes it could be as simple as saying your a balance will remain past due. You're going to remain with a past due balance. I mean, sometimes that's just enough. Like, I think people get stuck in saying nothing will happen. I can't do anything. It's medical debt. I can't credit report. If I do anything, my client's going to get upset if I say the wrong thing. So, you know, you don't want them overthinking it. I think sometimes the best weapon is just to be honest and transition right into some negotiation questions on, you know, how much time do you think you need and what do you think you can do? And tell me more about your situation and now I can reel them back in. So for me, it would be, yeah, don't overthink it. If you don't have any teeth to what can happen if they don't pay, then leave them with, you're going to stay with a past due balance. I mean, most paying consumers, that's not a good thing for them. So that would be my spin.
Yeah, I think those are both great answers. Me personally, sometimes I, when you listen to calls, a lot of it depends on the tone and what's their, how are they posing that question and what's their, you can't see their body language, but you can hear it. And I think both of you guys, Rick and Jose, both made great points. And I think I'm kind of in between there and it just depends where they're at, which way I go or want my agents to go with it. And sometimes it's just as simple to your point, Jose. Is there a reason that you're not paying it? Do you not want to pay this? Like, what's preventing you from paying this? And then sometimes I just play to the pride and go towards the call. If anything, don't you want to stop phone calls? Like, let's get this resolved, you know, and try to open up into what's going to push that consumer in that direction. Collections is an art. You've got to know why they're asking that question before you can really approach it the best way. But my goal is always to get into what's stopping you from this. Let's get this taken care of. Here's your options and start talking solutions as quick as I can.
No, I agree with everybody. And I think to kind of differentiate between what they're asking, is it a baiting question or is it someone that just honestly doesn't know? It's just asking that question. I'll get collectors said, hey, can you review this? I think they were baiting me. And sometimes they are. And sometimes it's just someone that's just very unsure and just doesn't know. And it's, I think, part of our job to kind of educate them. Mm-hmm. But I think the big thing is this is not a conversation we want to have, right? We want to have a conversation on resolution, moving away, like Rick was saying, ask, answer. So if they ask us, but honestly, do we really know exactly what's going to happen? Not really. But I don't want to come right out and go, well, I don't know, and just sit there. Well, that hasn't been determined yet. I'm more than happy to help you resolve this. Let's see what we can do for you and move on to what we want to. So it's about maybe not specifically what you say. It's about how you say it and moving that conversation along, because there can be a lot of gray area there because we don't know. Are we going to credit report? Are we going to sue? As the collector, I don't know. I don't know what the next step is. What I can tell you now is my goal is to help you resolve this. I'm happy to do that right here, right now, for what do we need to do this? And kind of push that conversation away, because if you stay in that conversation, whether they're baiting you or not, that's not going to end up being a successful call at the end.
And there's also this fear in the unknown, right? Even if you were going to sue that person, let's say it's $10,000, you verify they own their home, they got a job, and you're going to sue them if they don't pay it. You know, we would still never tell them we're going to sue them, right? You might get that debtor who's the experienced debtor says, you know, I'll just pay it on the court steps. You know, there's that fear of the unknown. Well, what's going to happen? Well, we have a lot of different options. You know, this is we're trying to avoid further collection efforts. I mean, again, it depends on what you're going to do. What's going to happen if I don't pay it? Are you telling me that you're not going to pay it? Again, you want to try to get to resolution. If they just start asking you questions about, well, what's going to happen? I'm not going to pay that. You're wasting your time on someone who doesn't want to resolve the bill. You know, I'll try to help. I always say, you know, I'll try to help anybody who wants to be helped. I wait. Usually I'll get people say, well, I want help. And then it's a simple, you know, negotiation, how much you need. And then you start, you know, talking numbers as opposed to, you know, consequences. That's an area you want to stay away from.
Questions coming in from the audience. We've got suggestions on how to answer this question. We've got a lot to continue talking about, more questions to throw out there. But first, before we get any deeper into the conversation, I did want to hit the pause button briefly. I wanted to invite Chris Rickman from Peak Revenue Learning, who's sponsoring today's webinar, to say a few words. Chris, there you are.
Thank you, Mike, and hello, everyone. We're grateful for the opportunity to sponsor today's webinar. Our company provides Knowledge Source, the leading knowledge, skills, and compliance training application for companies with collection operations. Knowledge Source is used by our clients to simplify and lower the cost of training new and existing employees, whether they are on-site or remote. As mentioned earlier, the forgetting curve describes the rapid, dramatic deterioration of retained knowledge after learning events, whether that is new hire or other types of training. In addition to this leading to increased mistakes and complaints, missed revenue and dissatisfaction, this definitely contributes to increased turnover. A problem many organizations face is considering employee development to be an expense rather than an investment. This view can have a detrimental impact on morale, motivation, retention. According to a study by IBM, employees who feel they are not being developed to reach their career goals are 12 times more likely to leave their company. Most folks we speak to, they recognize the outdated model of onboarding training followed by annual refresher training is absolutely inferior to a model where spaced, repetitive micro-learning drives much deeper knowledge. Knowledge sources used by our clients who want to build and maintain a high level of assurance staff members have mastered and are maintaining their mastery of the knowledge and skills necessary when interacting with consumers. Knowledge source will increase quality, lower risk, grow revenue, lower costs, and help decrease turnover. To find out more about us, please visit peakrevenuelearning.com or give me a call. I'm at 803-521-0031. We're here to help make your job easier and help you and your company be more successful. Thank you.
Trying to type your phone number in, Chris. 803-521-0031.
That is correct.
There you go. Dropped it in the chat for everybody. All right. Thanks, Chris. Thanks to Peak Revenue Learning for sponsoring today's webinar. I appreciate it. Again, the website is peakrevenuelearning.com. All right. So let's see. To close the loop on this question, someone said, our rebuttal to what happens if I don't pay this is if you decide to not pay, then this, we will continue to reach out. We will continue to try and find ways to come up with a plan for you to pay this. I also teach the class to explain all of the things we can offer them, payment plans or settlements, et cetera. I think that closes the loop on that. All right, so let's see here. Some other questions that we've had come in from the audience. A common thing we get, and it's only going up, is people who think we are a scam. We have a rebuttal encouraging them to visit our website, to look us up online, and then to encourage them to reach back out to us by giving them a callback number. Something any of you have anything to add on, anything, any additional insights on that particular question or situation?
You know, it's funny how things have changed over the years. You know, we used to, you know, we still have a lot of different phone numbers, you know, if someone's blocking our number, whatnot. But, you know, we used to put like nothing on the caller ID. We didn't want them to say, you know, Kinnam, didn't want to show Kinnam on that. Now it's all about, you know, name recognition. You know, go to our website. You know, every communication we have, you know, it shows up on our caller ID. We're trying to get them to our website. Go to our payment portal. You know, because there are a lot of scams out there. We've all seen it. And now it's a situation, you know, if they see Kinnam and they see it's a collection agency, they're not going to pay. They're not going to pay anyhow. But at least this way, they're not answering because they think you're a scam. I think it leads to credibility to, you know, make sure that you do provide the name on the caller ID to, you know, to show them, to point them to the website, to show that you're a legitimate company. You know, I always say, hey, if you don't believe, you can check out a client. We also send out, you know, the validation notice. You know, I know some places will send out the validation, you have 5 days within contact, right? We send it out right when we get it, usually a couple days after we skip trace, make sure the address is correct. So they get that phone, that letter from us with our name on it, and we'll use that. You know, say, hey, we sent you out a notice as required by federal law. We didn't get any dispute from you. We now assume the debt to be valid. We were just calling as a courtesy to see how you wanted to resolve this. You know, so you, when they start saying scam, say, well, we sent you a letter. You didn't respond to it, you know.
And I think that's a tough one because if they've already made up their mind this is a scam, there's only so much you can do to really convince them otherwise. That could just be their script and what they're sticking on. But real quickly, what we'll use is Google reviews. We have almost a 5-star Google review, and we definitely, if someone is questioning our company, is this a scam, who are you, things like that, we'll direct them right to our website. Say, please check out our 1,000+ Google reviews that we have, all, you know, mostly 5 stars. And that definitely helps. And not only for the consumers themselves, but also prospective clients. Or Rick, if you're saying, if they're calling, you see the caller ID, maybe they're not sure if they're going to call or not. Maybe they look us up and say, hey, they're reputable. There's some good reviews by not only clients, but other consumers who we've helped. Hopefully that will bring them a little closer to us, and we can get that communication, that contact with them.
Yeah, I agree. And I think all of us on the phone and even in the web, you know, logged in, a lot of times that's a stall tactic. They know they owe the debt. It's not a secret. One of the few that, you know, truly think it's a spam or scam, or, you know, I like to say, we say, you know, you can look us up. We've been in business since 1995. Like, and that when you go into that detail, you know, you try to link with the consumer that, hey, RGF, we've been in business this long. If we're a spam, we're not going to be in business that long. We're not going to stick around and be there. And I think that's the message that we try to relay and try to connect.
You know, those are all in line with things that we do as well. So I'm just going to come out with an add-on to that. Otherwise, I'm just echoing everybody else. So my add-on would be to educate the consumer. And in that way, meaning, you know, sometimes it's just explaining the revenue cycle. You know, we're not a scam. What happened is they sent statements to X amount of times. And now I'm talking specific to medical debt, but at times you're going to refer to date of service and things that are going to trigger memory and build some trust. You know, it looks like your Blue Cross Blue Shield was already billed. This is your patient responsibility. And you kind of just segue straight back into the data points that make it valid. And again, to what I'm hearing everyone else say, lets me know we're handling these properly. Is if they're still not good with that, then that's their tactic to, you know, not address the situation. And those are never people I want to be stuck on the phone with for very long. I mean, those are not great outcomes either way. You know, I'm not going to get blood from a turnip, and I'm, you know, probably going to generate a complaint or fall for the bait, or none of it's worth it, right, at that point. So that's where we're like, hey, if we challenge them, remember, most of the people we're talking to today are on their smartphone, so I'll wait right here. Go ahead and look it up. I also use the Google review piece. I mean, good job, Bruce. We're at a 4.1. We're working on it, but, you know.
You'll get there.
Getting some of that feedback from consumers that say, I thought they were a scam and I'm glad that I talked to them. Those are the ones. Those are the winners that I think can help you break through that obstacle or overcome that challenge. But again, I think it's also important to keep your ears out for the ones that's just going to be their stance. Let's move on then. It's not worth it.
Okay. Here's another question. Well, it's kind of the same question, but what is this text message about? Is this a scam? Is that a different answer?
Ooh, I would say that one would vary on what's in your text message. What content are you sending them? Are you sending them a Zortman? Are you sending them an actual statement? I guess I'll just speak to application-wise. I would say the link has all the information, so I don't have a lot of work to do there other than maybe point them at, if you check the Google book, you know, I might even compliment them. Hey, you know, it's very smart for you to ask that before you hit any links on your phone. I might take the role of a cybersecurity trainer and say, you get a gold star for that. Now let me tell you the name of our company, whatever, and try to get it over the phone. But if not, they can go back to the link and pay us.
Yeah. Let's see here. Other questions. It seems like there's a lot of autonomy to have straight up real talk conversations with consumers. It seems like this is challenging to do when there are a lot of things we can't say due to compliance restrictions. How do you find the balance between truly helping with authentic intentions while making sure we aren't outside compliance boundaries? That sounds like a webinar.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I got the green box around my head here, so I'm just going to go for it. That's a good question. Bail me out, guys, because I lost my train of thought.
Yeah. No, that is a good question, but sometimes I think we overthink that. Yes, there's compliance that we have to abide by and we have to follow it. But at the end of the day, if you're being honest and straightforward and respectful with the correct tone, I think you're within those compliance measurements. I think a lot of times when I listen to calls, even with agents that have that same concern, I'll pull calls and we'll listen. And 9 times out of 10, they're overthinking it, and they're within compliance by answering the question more times than not. So that is a tough question to me, in my opinion, not to overthink the question, but it's hard to answer that without the examples, because you got to be honest and straightforward and can't mislead them. And after that, you can be have a straightforward conversation.
Yeah, and thank you. I'm back on my track here, Larry. I would say you the balance really is how you monitor and manage it. And then again, going back to like the culture of your agency, the culture of your team, you know, the debt type. I'm always going to go back to debt type, because that's going to dictate a lot of what I can and can't say from a, you know, we don't want to be threatening. We just want to be actual and factual. That's really the approach I like to take. And, you know, it's not getting in the weeds on your whole process of what happens next. It's more of, you know, again, just trying to get transitioned into that resolution stage of the call. How can we resolve this? Speech analytics for us helps a lot as well. When it's programmed properly, and that's a long road to get to where you want to be, but that can be a great tool as well, using speech analytics to help guide collectors in conversations with scripted responses, or at least framework of where we want to send them to. Okay, look at what they just said. Here's a financial assistance link. Ask them if they filled out an application. Go down that road, you know, to keep us safe. And again, just the general things of not being threatening and not being deceptive.
I'll just add quickly, less is more. I mean, once you get through the disclaimers, you're just talking to a human being. Now, they might have other questions, things like that. But if we're being honest and direct and upfront, it's all about your tone at that point, right? And again, I think, you know, Larry, you're alluding to collectors being maybe overthinking it. They're giving too much. They want to answer this and give more, just give what's needed and then move on to the resolution part, what we want to talk about. Again, yeah, less is more in these situations.
Yeah, and I tell them, you know, we're all consumers. I try to relate with them, saying, you know, let's, I try to make the debt be the bad guy, because, you know, obviously, you know, they may be feeling, you know, pressure, and get it, they probably have other bills. You know, but I say, you know, listen, you know, this is an outstanding bill. It needs to be resolved. You know, hey, don't get me started. I got my own bills I got to take care of here. You know, we got to get this resolved. But, you know, how do you want my help? How can I help you get through this? Something else I was going to say, but yeah.
Your train left with Jose's.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. Let's see here. Another question. We get a ton of calls saying they paid the debt with us, but the status is still showing on their credit report. As a third party, we don't report, only the creditor in most situations. How do we navigate that frustration, especially if one of the pain points is that the creditor isn't responsive or pushing them to speak back with the collection agency? Make the creditor the bad guy. I'm going to take Rick's answer.
I just had that call. I just had that call literally a half an hour before this call. We had posted this a year ago, and I was looking at it. It was May of 23. I'm thinking, oh, well, we update on the 25th of each month. I'm like, whoa, this is a year ago. You know, at that point, you know, all I can state is facts. We've shown it as paid in full. We didn't even report it. It was reported to our client. It's up to them to go ahead. And now, what I did is I sent out an email. I explained what I was doing. I said, but I can't force them to take it off your credit. I mean, I can't force them to show as paid. I can instruct them. I'm going to get a representative involved. Because what I'm now looking for is I don't want to get a complaint and then be, you know, part of that. You know, I'm kind of passing the buck to our client, saying, listen, I'm going to notify them to let them know that it was on their statement. We did notify them. Maybe they missed it. If they have any questions, to call me. That's really all you can do, though. I mean, there's not too much. I can't make them take it off or make them post it as paid.
Yeah, I think scripted responses is the approach there for us, is just to give a scripted response. We took the following steps. We're not the credit bureaus. Now, I also like to try to end those. If that's not going well, I like to end it with a what can I do? So here's what I could do. I've already taken these steps. But what I can do is I can send you a letter saying that this is taken care of, and whoever you're going to follow up with, whether it be the credit bureau, and now I'm not directly putting it back on my client, right? But if you want to redirect that to the credit bureau, here's your letter of the debt is satisfied, and that can help them along as well. So trying to end out as helpful as possible while delivering a scripted response would be my, that would be my approach.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Rick hit the biggest concern on, you know, addressed the biggest concern with that. The last thing you want to do is be combative and cause a bigger issue than it is. So sometimes you can get very, you know, you just got to be respectful and really guide them the right way. That's why I like the scripted response and just keep your composure and really be respectful, because the last thing you want is to get a little agitated or your agents get agitated and then it snowball into a complaint.
Yeah, just to add to that, I'd say also, you know, you kind of triggered that formulary, is just be empathetic, right? Because typically people in that situation are, especially if they're emotionally heightened, you just have to know there's something behind that. They're waiting on a loan. There's a house on, you know, on, at stake. There could be some, you know, some high stakes on their side. And maybe it's just a matter of understanding what they're even looking at. What credit report are you looking at? You know, that can help too. Like if you're on some hodgepodge website looking at, or it's coming from your credit card app or something, that could be glitched. You want to also kind of source where they're looking. Where are you looking at your credit? Because we made our update such time ago, can also be helpful.
Yeah, sometimes Credit Karma isn't as updated as TransUnion. We'll send them there and say, well, how much did you pay for Credit Karma? Oh, it's free. You ever hear the expression, you get what you pay for sometimes? You know, sometimes it's not always up to date. Not 100% accurate. I can tell you what you don't want to say is, hey, you know, it's taken you a year to pay your bill. Well, maybe it'll take a year to come off. I mean, those are the kind of things that'll...
I've probably said that at least once in the last 20 years, and that is, I agree. Do not say that.
Bad.
Times have changed, right?
Yes, big time. Big time.
Someone did add, one thing you can add to the credit report response is that neither we nor our client have any control over whether the credit reporting agency reports what is sent to them. Make them the bad guy.
Sure.
And then someone else said provide the phone numbers to TransUnion Experian, putting it back on them. We are two separate entities. Here's what we did. So you know, and you can contact them. Do you need a phone number to contact them?
And direct them to file an e-Oscar dispute, because it's not going to go to you if you didn't report it. It's going to go to the client, right?
Yep.
They're the furnisher.
All right. Let me throw, I think this will probably be another common question. At least I've heard it mentioned a few times over the years. Can I call you later to take care of this?
I'm sure we've all heard that.
No.
Exponential amount of time.
No.
The answer question, no.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, they said move on. No, and let's move on. But yes, I mean, obviously, I think this is more so going to be on the stalling tactic side of things. Not that they couldn't be an inconvenient time, but certainly they're trying to tell you something. Either one, I don't want to deal with this right now, whether they just really don't want to deal with it or they actually have something going on at that time that prevents them from dealing with it. But I think more so with they just don't want to deal with this. I think that's the probably top reason. So what we kind of do to get through that is, okay, yeah, I understand. It won't take long. And then move on to what we want to talk. It'll only take a moment and move on what we want to. A lot of times you get past that initial balk of theirs, oh, I don't have time for this. They'll stay on the phone with you. Mm-hmm. Now, if it's really an issue, they're going to bring that back up. I'm driving. I'm at work. Or if they say, hey, it's an inconvenient time, right? We're going to try to push the conversation. If it comes back up, hey, I told you I'm at work. Well, we're going to back off at that point, right? We're not the way we lose their job, get into an accident in the car, things like that. So we'll try to push through. Hey, nice and easy, right? Hey, it won't take long. I'm happy to help. Let me go give you some information. Get them talking and do what we want to do. Usually they forget about that they didn't have time 30 seconds before, and now we're 5 minutes into the call, right? And that balk of theirs is out the window at that point, right? So we just want to keep them on the phone at that point. But the thing is, I probably want to reiterate, is that if they bring up, hey, work, driving, inconvenient time, then at that point, we're going to secure a call back, try to set up a date and time to have them call back. Because at that point, once they get there, that's only going to cause a complaint, right? We want to back off at that point.
I agree. And, you know, and a lot of times, You know, it may be they're trying to rush you off because they can't pay the balance. You know, they got a call from another bill collector and they told them the balance was due and they never even try to work with them. You know, if they find out that, hey, you know, I'll try to work with you, and they'll stay on that phone typically longer. But to Bruce's point, you want to be careful if they're at work. You want to be careful if they're driving. You know, one of the things, though, that I like to at least find out, you should know at the end of the conversation. So let's say they're driving. You want to be careful because, you know, you don't want to say, hey, get out your credit card. Well, I don't care if you're driving. You pull it out. You know, but I still want to add, if they're saying, well, I'd like to pay you, but I, you know, my credit card's in my wallet. I can't get to it. You know, so a question I would ask is, well, where do you bank at? You know, what's the name of the, is this going to be a debit card or credit card? You know, and if they start not answering you there, if they don't want to give you the name of the bank, so if they still continue the conversation while driving, they're stating that they can't get it out of their wallet, for example. Well, where do you bank at? You know, just asking a question like that. And if they say, well, I'm not going to give you that and hang up, you know your answer. Their answer isn't they can't get their debit card. It's that they're not going to pay the bill. So you should know more by that. You know, well, what time are you going to contact me back? You know, try to hold them into hold them accountable. So you're going to be, it takes an hour. All right, you can have the number on my caller ID. Call me back. What should I assume if you don't call me back? Well, I'll call you back. I mean, you hear it all the time. Okay, so if you don't call me back, should I put down there that you're refusing to pay the debt? You want to be careful using refusal, even though it has to be in writing. You know, a refusal to pay a debt in writing means it's a cease and desist. But I want to know, what is the reason? Is this really the reason is they're driving? Really they're at work? How many times have you talked to someone at work and they said, well, this will take about a half a minute. We just want to know if you had any intentional result. Well, I do, but I can't pay the balance. Oh, you need some more time? Okay, well, we can, you know, take care of it. And all of a sudden, they continue the conversation, you know. And if that's going on, then you're okay on that. But you do want to be careful of the work and the driving thing, so.
Yeah, I think most of the time they answer the phone for a reason. They want to find out who's calling them. And let's just be honest. Most people don't want to speak to a bill collector because maybe our past has created a bad reputation for our industry. So they don't want to be talked. They're anticipating the worst. So I tell my agents, one, expect them to try to get off the phone when you identify yourself. And then I really preach, you have a small window of opportunity to really get them to put their guard down and connect with them and let them know. My whole goal is to say, hey, I understand. I certainly can respect that. I just want you to know that my goal is here to really work with you and try to work through some solutions. Because if you can let that, you know, flip that light bulb in their head and make them say, oh, he's going to treat me with respect. He's going to try to find solutions. He's not talking down to me. That can buy you that extra time to get into solutions.
Yep, absolutely so correct.
That's my theory. You have a small window.
You do. And I totally agree. And to, you know, I heard Bruce talk about, you know, be careful to not push them if it's an inconvenient time. And I certainly agree with that. Is for me, it's a fork in the road type of approach where if I hear it's an inconvenient time, I have to go this way. And if I don't hear that it's an inconvenient time, I'm doing exactly what Larry described. I'm trying to build trust. I'm trying to disarm and get engaged and just say, hey, you know, typically it only takes me 3 to 4, 3 to 5 minutes to help somebody else, kind of removing isolation and that you're not the only person that's behind on this bill. So it typically takes me 3 to 5 minutes. I'm glad you picked up the phone today. I'm really good at this. Let me see if I could just get you in and out of here. That you almost put your sales hat on for that part. As long as they're not telling you it's an inconvenient time, then for my collector, yeah, it's time to sell. You know, give me 5 minutes. You're going to feel a lot better when you hang up. This will be off of you and we can move on. And so I think using some strong selling points and some good transitional, building some trust and rapport, not being like what they expect you to be, is definitely a strong weapon in that situation.
Somebody posted in the chat, I'm happy to hold while you find a place to pull over. This will take a minute to finish up and resolve.
Yep. I've used that plenty of times. Yeah, I understand. I don't mind holding while you pull over. You just throw it out there and see what they say.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. You're not demanding anything. If they might say okay, or they might get real pissy about it. Oh. It's okay. You just threw something out there, like I said, trying to build that. If it works out, it does. If not, well, you took your shot, and then you move on with the call.
Yeah. Another thing that we started doing probably about 6 months ago is getting their email address. You know, asking them for an email address to say, okay, so obviously if now's an inconvenient time, what's your email address? You know, emails are not going to go into the 7 and 7. You know, if you had a contact, you know, you need to get permission to talk to that person back if you want to call within the 7 days. However, an email – you can go ahead and send that over to them and say, so is this a question, you know, I typically want to find out, is this a question that you need more time? You don't know what it is. You're disputing it. I want to find that out by sending an email. If I have the backup, I'll go ahead and send it to them. You know, here's a copy of this. You know, we spoke earlier today. You know, give me a call, you know, at your earliest convenience or something like that.
All right. I've been holding it. Here's a good one. How do you sleep at night?
Very well.
Very well. You know, again,
on a mattress made of the money from people like you.
Yeah. Wow.
I think I've used that one before.
That's a good one. But, you know, that's always going to be, you know, someone taking a shot at you. I think going back to, you're always going to hear me talk about debt types. What did I do? Did I sue you? Did I garnish your wages? Did we boot your car? You know, cause I've been a part of all of those processes, right? From student loans to municipal, there's teeth. How do you sleep at night? You know, I'm here to help people resolve bad situations. You know, you're certainly in one now. And I'm still here to help. Like, what's happened happened, and you kind of just try to move it on. It's either going to be post consequence or pre consequence is great, because I sleep great at night because most people work with me and we're able to dodge what's about to happen to you. So that's a weapon in that area. But aside from that, I'd say it's post the fact, and after that, it's just a matter of, you know. I'm just trying to help. Maybe we weren't able to help you, but we help a lot of people. Right. Maybe you should have picked up the phone when we called you those 125 times the first.
Well, that's just frustration leaking through, right? They're really not mad at us. They're just mad maybe at the client, probably more so their situation that they're in it, right? And then, of course, who do they think debt collectors are? Well, the big bad bullies, right? So as soon as we're on the call, they're ready for a fight, right? And then they're going to throw comments. So what I tell collectors, look, you got to put your ego in the drawer. Right. What's the best? What's going to get this account resolved? Right. You have to eat some crow, probably. Right. You could come back and stand strong and buy sleep just fine. Is that going to help get it resolved? Is that where we want to go with this? Right. The consumer's trying to get you off your game. Are you going to allow them to do it or not? Take a deep breath. You don't have to answer it. Say, well, my goal here is just to help you resolve this. Like you're saying, Jose, build some rapport, bring them in, embrace them. They need a hug. They need a hug. Now, a lot different than probably the industry a couple of decades ago. We weren't giving them hugs, but you have to kind of do that now, right? Give them a hug. It's going to be okay. You can still keep control and do what you want to do, but take those opportunities. We call it use niceties, right? If they tell you something like rough, that divorce, someone died, that sounds frustrating. Boy, I'm sorry to hear that. I'm glad we're talking. How can I help you? And then you move the conversation along. All these instances, and whether they're questions or comments or to throw stuff at you, these are all opportunities for us to turn the call around and take control of the call.
Okay. I thought my insurance was supposed to pay this.
Education, education, education. Yeah. I get that. That's on my top five. You know, we asked 100 consumers, and the answers are on the board, right? I thought my insurance paid. It's amazing to me how many Americans still think that insurance pays everything right off the bat from your very first visit, which is not the case at all. So that's it. That's strictly in that arena. That is all education. And the stronger your agents understand that process, the more successful they're going to be at collecting payments. That is a rebuttal that is a very high conversion rate if you overcome that one properly. You'll get payment in a lot of scenarios there. But it is education. Just this is how it works. Sometimes even helpful in having some Epic access or some client system access to say, hey, your insurance denied the claim because it's out of network. And there's all these, it's a rabbit hole, but knowing your way to navigate that is very valuable in overcoming objections and collecting medical debt. So there I said it.
Yeah, you tell me, whenever you go to the doctor, you're always signing the patient information sheet, right? So is it for any reason, I always make clear, any reason your insurance doesn't pay, you're responsible for it. If you want to go after your insurance company, that's between you and them, but this has nothing to do with that. Did my client provide the services to you? Yes. At this point, you're responsible for it. Now, I'll be more than happy to work with you to get this resolved, but, you know, if you want to sue your insurance company, good luck with that. But unfortunately, you owe this. You're responsible.
Yeah, this is one of those, I think insurance can get a little tricky sometimes, and that's the easiest rebuttal in my mind to listen to calls and pinpoint what agents need more training.
Well, I think this could be a whole webinar in itself just about insurance talk-offs.
For sure.
But I think education is the part because, again, they assume, oh, I have insurance, or I'll pay my $20 copay, I'll never pay anything again. Right. So it's our job to educate them. And again, kind of that embracing them that comes up. Well, hey, has anyone explained to you how that works between you and your insurance company? Right. 9 times out of 10, they'll say, no, not of course. And then we kind of give them a little 10,000-foot overview of, you know, their relationship and how it's their responsibility. A lot of it's just bringing it back, explaining it. And then at the end going, well, now it's patient responsibility, and then move on what we want to speak about. If they continue to press, we have a couple like other optional rebuttals that we'll give because we can get a lot of different questions or different angles for the insurance. So we give 4 or 5 different optional ones as well, just give the collector more ammo. And we'll see what happens. Again, it could be one of those where they're just convinced and insurance is going to pay for everything, and that's that. We're never going to convince them otherwise, but we're still going to go through our steps. Worst thing, at the end of the day, they dispute it. We'll get our documentation. We'll validate it. We'll follow up, and we'll go from there. But yeah. I think the big thing is the educating, because they're not sure. Just like they all, oh, I signed up for my free checking. I thought it was free. You know, not really.
You could challenge them too. If their explanation of benefits is a good challenge, a lot of people don't even glance at that thing, and it can be a tool for a serious consumer that's not just stalling. That could be a good way to close the gap, so that they have already something in their hand, like from their insurance company. Oh, okay. Like, and that could be a good approach too. It's just really trying to get to the source of, you know, where is their understanding at in the process.
Well, and it may not help. I saw something come up in the chat, you know, where, oh, but what if the client tells them they're covered and they don't owe anything? Again, I think from the start, there's just miscommunication and confusion. And then 6 months, even a year later, it gets to us, and they're still convinced what the receptionist said back in 2023, that, hey, don't worry about it. You're all good. So we have to overcome that as well.
And nobody's called me for 6 months, which means I don't owe it now. You know, that's
not,
yeah.
I have to admit, I don't know. Someone asked, my DSA is taking care of this. I'm not sure what DSA is. Could it be FSA maybe? What are some useful rebuttals against this?
Well, the DNF are next to each other on the keyboard. So
that's what I'm guessing, but I don't know. Does DSA mean something? Debt Settlement Agency.
Oh.
There you go. Thank you.
Well, you know, apparently not, right? Would it be calling you? Would it be calling you? So I don't have their information on record. I don't know what you're referring to, but I can easily help you without you having to pay them to pay me. That's my first swing for sure. And then we go from there.
Yeah, I ask them if they're paying for that. And I try to make it clear that we can offer the same exact settlement, whether we give it to them directly or work through the debt consolidation company. And that's really what I poke at.
Well, I've still got most of the questions I started with, but we're almost out of time here, which just means that there's likely a part two of this coming because this has been really good. But we do have a few minutes left. Before we wrap up, what I'd like to do is go around the panel and ask each of you for advice. What should everybody who's watching this, what's the first thing they should do as soon as this webinar is over? We've been talking about answers to common questions for an hour now. You know, the webinar's over. People go back to work, go back to the collection floor. What's the first thing they should do? Rick, we'll start with you.
Ask questions. You know, you should know at the end of the conversation whether that person – typically now I can remember back old school, you have to – you know, checks in the mail, there's no more of that. But if someone's saying, you know, I don't know what this bill is for. So you're saying if I were to go ahead and email you a copy of the bill right now, you can pay the balance. Is that correct? Well, no, I can't pay the balance. Oh, so it's not a question of that you need a copy of the bill. It's that you need some more time. I can work with you on that. Now you get off of that, you know, that stall tactic, and you start talking, you know, money. So I'm going to say ask questions.
Okay. Thanks. Bruce?
In terms of asking questions, I would probably go back and ask all your collectors, what are the most common questions they're getting? I'd probably start there if you want to already have something set up. But in terms of, you know, delivering these rebuttals and answering these questions. What I want to focus on is being clear, concise, and confident when you're giving these. Because if you're timid, even though you might have the right answer, if you're not giving it correctly, it's not going to register. But if you're clear and confident, concise, exactly what you're saying, that's going to allow you to move the conversation on. So yes, is it about what you're saying, but be concerned about how you're saying it as well, because you might not even give the best answer, but if you're confident about it, that might register with the consumer and you can move the conversation along.
Okay. Jose.
Consistency. So like Bruce said, knowing what your top five objections are by project, by client, by whatever, you need to divide that up as. What are your top five objections and build your best effective rebuttals and make sure that your entire team uses it so that if I hang up on Rick and I get Bruce, Bruce is telling me the same thing Rick told me. And now I have to make my choice. So consistency.
Well said. Thanks. Larry.
Yeah, I agree with everything that each of the panelists said. Just to top it off, what I would do is I would recommend just roundtable discussions with your agents, getting up what roadblocks they're running into and talking through rebuttals so everybody's on the same page and everybody's getting a little bit of input, and I think that helps.
Excellent. Well, Larry, Bruce, Jose, Rick, I want to thank each of you so much for being here today. On behalf of everybody who's watching and listening to this, I'm walking away with a much better, some great answers, but also I think some new ways to approach how to answer some of the most common questions that consumers ask. Thank you very much for being here and sharing today. We really appreciate it. I want to thank Chris Rickman and the team at Peak Revenue Learning one last time for sponsoring today's webinar. Again, please check them out, peakrevenuelearning.com. To those of you watching us live today, thank you so much. Love the questions, love the engagement. The chat was going for an hour, which is always great. Thank you so much for being here and for sharing. As always, if you have any other ideas, topics, anything you want to see covered in a webinar, questions, things keeping you awake at night, whatever, by all means, shoot me an email, mike@accountsrecovery.net. Happy to add it to the calendar for an upcoming webinar. If you're watching us live, we're back in 16 minutes. We've got another webinar coming up where we're going to break down the Supreme Court ruling in the Chevron deference and what's going on with that. If you haven't signed up yet, there's a link in the chat, or you go to the events calendar on accountsrecovery.net and find the link there. So we'll be back in a few minutes for that. You know, if you are watching, great. If not, we're back with a webinar tomorrow on text messaging and how to get your applications approved by aggregators and the carriers. So again, a link on the events calendar. We hope to see you back for one of those soon. Until then, enjoy the rest of your day, everybody. Thanks so much for being here. We look forward to seeing everybody soon. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Everyone, have a good